Good morning. So last time we covered the stop and wait protocol, kind of the simplest version of doing our reliability. It's the protocol we introduced a little less formally in CSO2. So we have this one bit sequence number because we need one worry we have with reliability is we need to know, are we getting something new or a repeat of something old? And why would we get a repeat of something old? Well, the biggest reason is that our basic strategy to ensure reliability is that sometimes we repeat messages. When do we decide to repeat messages? Well, when we don't get an acknowledgement of them in a timely manner. So we have this sort of process where the sender does this send, it waits for ACK, then sends and repeats. And this wait for ACK sort of has this if no ACK, resend kind of secondary option there. And how do we know if there's no acknowledgement? Well, we assume after some timeout that there isn't. And the receiver receives something, acknowledges, and repeats that indefinitely, and it needs to handle if it receives duplicates, which is going to detect by seeing its sequence number 0 followed by sequence number 0, or sequence number 1 followed by sequence number 1. If the sequence number didn't change, it must be a duplicate. If the sequence number did change, we assume it's something new. And we're going to have a whole bunch of refinements on this sort of basic idea. Like, it's in fact going to arguably be a topic for like what I'm anticipating to be like 4 more lectures of stuff, depending on what you call a part of this, and all about making this actually perform well. And to talk about performance, we first introduce kind of the sort of key metrics we're going to measure in our networks, not the only things we can measure. So one is this idea of latency, the time it takes a message, you know, something to happen, typically a message to get from A to B, or often we'll talk specifically about sort of round trip time, which is a time for a message to get from A to B and then from back from B to A. And we'll talk about round trip time because practically speaking, it's something we can measure a lot easier than one-way latency. We sort of talked about what are the components of latency, and we had these kind of big ones, which was sort of, well, we have to actually transmit the data, that we can only send the signal so fast when we have varying voltage or whatever else we're using to encode the signal. That's going to take some amount of time. That's going to depend on kind of the speed of our link. We have a propagation delay, that if we have a, especially a physically long link, a signal we sent at one end is not going to get to the other end instantaneously. And we have queuing delay. And we'll probably call queuing delay things that include some other processing, but the main thing queuing delay includes is waiting in line. That packets on things like switches. And also it turns out, like, when we're receiving packets, if like there's 10 programs that are getting packets in, you know, there's going to be a line the packets have to wait in. That's going to be some queuing delay. And that's going to be often a very big part of our latency. And then we talked about throughput, and we kind of said throughput / bandwidth. So our throughput was sort of how much data we could send per unit time. And if we talk about throughput separately from bandwidth, we might be talking about the capacity for data versus how much we actually achieve. These terms aren't like used super formally, so sometimes people will say the bandwidth, you know, I have this much bandwidth, and they mean that that's the throughput they actually see. But if we're distinguishing between the two, bandwidth is the sort of capacity, and throughput is what we actually get. We mentioned this idea of jitter, that in addition to kind of the sort of how long things take typically, we're often interested in how consistent that is. And on most real networks, latency will not be that consistent. And well, we learned why, because we looked at this component of latency is queuing. And that depends on what's going on in the network. And often that's going to vary over time very significantly. And so as a consequence, we have sort of variation in how long things take. And that means that we're not going to have this sort of nice clockwork. It's going to be a little more chaotic than that. And we looked at kind of measuring some of these attributes. We looked at measuring with ping. So we saw that there's this feature of the internet control message protocol that supports sending a packet and receiving a response back that's just a copy of what you sent. That's kind of the most straightforward way to measure round trip time, kind of our easy to measure version of latency. We also saw that you don't need a special protocol for that. You can just do that with any old packet you get a response to. So the example of using TCP packets where we sent a broken TCP packet and just look for the error response and time that. And that's another way we can measure round trip time. And those might be different if the system processes sort of ICMP and TCP differently, which is not super uncommon. Questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so there's some anonymous feedback I'll talk briefly about asking for a virtual queue for office hours. I believe I have one set up, but usually doesn't make sense to use it in person office hours, but I'll talk to my TAs about what's actually happened in in-person office hours? Because I don't know for other than mine. We have a Discord set up, but it's not exposed because no TAs have wanted to do remote office hours. For asynchronous remote questions, I prefer Piazza because it avoids repeat questions more. For synchronous stuff, yeah, use Discord, but no one's wanted the whole remote office hours, so I just haven't posted it. Also, that it seemed like I put the CSO2 values on our Panopto page. This was a mistake and meant that they weren't on the CSO2 Panopto page, so thank you for pointing that out. My main place I put videos is the schedule page of the website, which is why I didn't notice, but I believe I fixed this. Also asking me to change the titles on Panopto. I might consider that. It's not a high priority for me. It's harder than it sounds because I have some automation for all the video processing that kind of uses the file names more than it probably should. Okay. And do some brief homework Q&A and or other questions. Yeah, so you were asking about byte arrays in the homework. Yeah. Byte arrays from bytes to bits and bits to bytes?
Yeah, it's generally like breaking up the message or putting it together.
Bytes. So I think what's confused people about this, I've seen in office hours, is the I need a way of storing an array of bits in Python. And I could do this as a list of zeros and ones. Python lists aren't super efficient, so I use a byte array to store an array of bits. So this returns a byte array of 0 and 1 bytes because there's no good way of getting a bit array in Python. But it's just representing bits. I think that's the main thing that's confused people. You should be able to manipulate it like a Python list for the most part. And if you want to convert it to another format, you're welcome to do that. Like, you don't even have to use those functions. They're just there as an example that's hopefully helpful. Yes?
Yeah, so when you say 0 and 1 bytes, you mean like the literal hex 00 and hex 01?
When I say 0 and 1 bytes, I mean a byte with the integer value 0 and the byte with the integer value 1? Exactly.
Okay.
And I guess this has confused people a bit, but the reason I'm using a byte array is just because I don't see a better type in Python that isn't awkward to access.
Not a question, but more of a statement. So that I know that had confused me while I did it. I didn't realize when you got the value you got back from a byte array, when you do some operation that gets it, you'll get like int value via singular value from it. It's just a little heads up to that.
Okay, so yeah, people are confused. When you access an entry in a byte array, it's an integer, not a like a character or something or a byte string. Yeah.
So one of the requirements is that you need to be able to send any sequence. I was looking at the textbook for like bit stuffing examples, and there are some, like I worked it out, and there are some sequences that will be like spuriously unescaped, like you can't actually send them. Is that okay?
Question, there are some sequences that are spuriously unescaped that is not acceptable. Okay. So if you think of what we did in lecture, we said our separator was this, and we escaped this by replacing this with, by 0,1 with 0,1,1. I assert that there are no cases where anything will be unescaped if you follow this procedure.
Okay.
Yeah.
If we end up using the bytes to bits and bits to bytes that you supplied, would you recommend at all like looking into changing things about it? Because right now I have issues like with the provided one, and I was thinking about like making some adjustments.
Question, would I recommend making changes to bytes to bits and bits to bytes? Those functions are from my reference solution. So they worked for me, but you're welcome to change them if you think that makes it easier for you.
Okay. Yeah. Another just other statement that I had, something I realized is that one thing that took me a little, I converted very early to bytes in something from one of my earlier attempts at a solution. I didn't realize that I actually had a substantial performance hit when running that function a lot. Because anyone else doing that, if you use the bytes of thing a lot, it will actually grit something down versus cutting things off at the bit level earlier.
So you're saying that doing the bits to bytes conversion is not fast.
Yes.
Yes, and that is correct. So I guess something I've seen that's I'm not going to deduct points for, but I have some people in office hours where the tests run pretty slowly for them, and usually it's because they're keeping like the array of recent bits, and they're scanning it every time they receive a new bit for something. And running bits to bytes is a way of doing that. Looking for like 0,1,1,1,0 or some other pattern in there every time is a way of doing that. And that makes your solution quadratic. And so no, it gets to be slow. Other questions? Yeah.
Yeah, so regarding samples, if you do that approach where you change the size of the sentinel, or what were you escaped by adding an extra bit? Like, how do you process that? Maybe this is better.
So the question is, how do we undo this? Yeah. We just replace 0,1,1 with 0,1, and we know if we see any 0,1,0, well, that must be an end marker. It's not part of the message. Yeah.
Related. When in the receiver, you're getting a byte array of bits, right? So you do not have to do any breaking up from bytes to bits in the receiver.
In the receiver, the function we call is giving you a bit at a time. The code we give you consolidates that bit into a byte array.
Okay.
But you could change that code if you wanted.
Wait, so what do you mean by the code we give you consolidates?
So there's a function that gets a bit at a time.
Yeah.
And the skeleton code takes that bit and puts it in the array.
Okay. But you can just get a bit.
Yes.
And just do it. Okay.
Yeah. So a more clever solution might construct the byte array directly bit at a time, but I think that's a little annoying to do. And didn't do it in my reference solution. Yeah.
So when you're calling like your supply bytes to bits and bits to bytes, does the input have to be because it has an I in range basically goes out of range or out of bounds if it's not?
So the question is, do bits to bytes expect the input to be multiple of it? I believe so, yes.
Okay. So I guess if you have
question. So if you have an input that's not that, you need to add extra bits if you want to use the existing functions, or you can modify them to handle fewer bits in the way you choose to. Yeah.
This is just more of a concept question on escaping. Assume our original message has a 0,1,1 in it. Would, as we unescape it, wouldn't we change the 0,1,1?
So you're saying, let's say our message has a 0,1,1.
Yeah, just like original.
So if I'm using the scheme we showed in lecture, then this becomes 0,1,1,1 when we send it. Maybe an analogy that makes this easier to understand is like, if I want to write a program that outputs this in C, I'm going to write this, right? And we're doing the same kind of thing is going to apply. Yeah, and I know I'm using the example of the escaping scheme I had in lecture. If you want to meet the size requirements in the assignment, which are now optional, but I didn't mean to be, you'll need to come up with a better escaping scheme that happens less often. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so last time we finished up, we were looking at measuring our round trip time. And we also want to measure other things, so we can measure throughput. So one way we can measure throughput is we can like just use a file transfer tool and see how fast it goes. But maybe that's measuring the disk speed instead of the throughput. You know, that's not perfect. There's some specialized tools for this. Probably the most well-known one out there is iPerf, and it just basically does something like a file transfer, but to nowhere and with generated data. So here I've ran iPerf, and iPerf you need to actually run on both ends. So I ran the server and a client on a different machine, and you know, it measures how fast it was, you know, just by sending a bunch of data through a socket. And there's a bunch of other things we can try to measure, but round trip time and throughput are the easy ones. So like in theory, we should be able to measure transmission delay. How can we do that? Well, we know the transmission delay increases as we increase the message size. And with ping, I can actually specify how big the ICMP packets are. So I can send two different sizes. Then I can look at the round trip times, do some computation, and figure out how many extra seconds per bit I had. So I did this between my desktop and the web server for the department. And I get this number, which seems wrong. And probably what's going on is I'm measuring the transmission delay on the links and also some processing time by my OS, the web server's OS, and or switches. And I'm getting that gives us like 50 megabits per second per link, even though the links are probably gigabit, but there's some other processing that affects this measurement. But we can try to measure sort of things like this, and there's lots of more clever ways to measure things that, you know, come up when you really want to measure something on the internet. You can often find a way to kind of measure it. Okay, so we had our interlude on measuring things. Let's talk about back to our stop and wait protocol. So our stop and wait protocol, we send one packet of data. We send two packets per round trip time, one forward and one acknowledgement, but one packet of data per round trip time sort of once we get going. And my home wired network is 0.6 milliseconds round trip time, because it's, you know, not very far. And let's say a typical packet is 1,400 bytes or 11,000 bits. So that gives me a throughput of 19 megabits a second. The link speed on my home network is a gigabit a second. So we've lost a lot here. And this is in kind of maybe some of the best networks we can have for this, because our round trip time is really small. So we're going to talk about, as our next topic, about fixing this problem, right? How do we actually use the remaining, you know, 900 megabits of capacity I have on my home network that I'm apparently just throwing away?
Not in real life, but theoretically, the run trip time should not include OS processing time or something like that, right?
question, theoretically, the round trip time should not include OS processing time. So usually when we're talking about round trip time, we actually care about the all-in round trip time, because for the things we're using it for, it's going to affect that. So for example, for this, I actually care about the OS processing time, because the OS needs to generate the acknowledgement and process the acknowledgement to send the next thing. So I really do want to include all that OS processing time in the round trip time for this purpose.
So it is not a direct reflection of the quality of the network, but also the overall quality, including like the machine itself.
So the question is, the round trip time, when I'm including all the OS processing time, doesn't just reflect the network, but the quality of the machine itself? I would say, think of it differently, that the network quality includes the machines at the end and how they deal with packets. And there's a lot we might end up doing to make that the network okay that involves what those how those machines process packets. But yeah, so for this purpose, you know, if we have a choice between measuring the round trip time, including the OS processing on either end and not, I want to measure it with, because that's gonna affect how fast I can transmit data. We need to include it. Other questions? Okay, so a brief interlude to mention our next assignment. So we have our next assignment is a simulator in Python again, where you implement a sender and receiver. And for part one, you're going to implement the stop and wait protocol. We have kind of a packet format in the simulator that's kind of a packets are a Python object, and you just set the acknowledgement field or don't in them. You know, to keep things simple, you don't have to encode it as bits. You did that in the previous assignment, we're done with that. We're just going to have our packets be abstracted and have fields you just set, and we imagine they get encoded and decoded for you. So for part one, you're going to implement stop and wait, and you know, including retransmission, show the basic logic of retransmit and so on. The simulator has a way of setting timeouts, so you can do that. And it's kind of similar to the networking lab, but different simulator and a little more, you know, like the real scenario. And we're going to use the same simulator for a part two, which is going to be implementing slide and window, which is going to be our faster version that sends more things at a time. So questions briefly about that next assignment? Okay.
Why?
Yeah.
So earlier you had mentioned that like you send a separate packet for an acknowledgement, but for this assignment, the acknowledgement is part of the original field, like a packet, right?
So question, earlier I mentioned we sent a separate packet, but it's part of the original field. We have one packet format, and the packet format has an acknowledgement number field. When you're sending data, you just will leave that as none. When you're sending acknowledgments, you'll set it to something.
Oh, so it'll be just...
But there's a single packet format that's used for all packets.
Okay.
Does that answer your question? Okay, other questions? Okay, and also you don't deal with checksums in this assignment. We just assume that that's handled for you. Okay, so now that I've mentioned that, let's go over... start our sliding window. And the basic idea is the problem we had that gave us bad performance is we were doing one thing at a time. Let's send, say, two at a time. So in this case, I'm going to have this policy that I always want to have two messages over going over the network, not just one. And that means that when I receive an acknowledgement, you know, I want to get back to our status quo of having two things on the network, so I'm going to send the next thing right away. I'm not going to send it earlier because I'm going to control how much I send over the network. So we send the next when the previous is out. And if we had more data, we'd send in, you know, after the act of two or three. And in this example, our acknowledgments are going to say not that we got a particular message, but that we got all the messages up to a certain one. And we'll see why that's useful in a bit. Okay. So what happens when we lose messages? So in this scheme, we're gonna have our same idea that we're gonna have a timeout, that if we don't get an acknowledgement after a timeout, we're gonna resend the message. And we're gonna have a timeout for every single message we sent. Yes, this bookkeeping can get annoying. For every single message we send, we're gonna have a timeout. And when that timeout expires, we're gonna resend it. So in this example, my timeout for message one eventually expires. My timeout for message two eventually expires, and we resend each of them kind of separately. And then only when I actually get the acknowledgement for message one am I allowed to send the next message. Yeah?
So we send the next two messages after we get the acknowledgement?
So we send the next two messages after getting the acknowledgement? We only send one at new message for each new acknowledgement. And the key way to remember that is that I'm having two things in my network at a time here. Only two, never more than that. I just chosen two is the number that's going to be on the network. Yeah?
This assumes that if you receive the packet with sequence number two before the packet with sequence number one, you have to not say, I got up to two, right? Because you didn't get one.
So the question is, what's going to happen if the receiver receives these out of order? I have to not include things I didn't get? Yes, we'll talk explicitly about how that works in a bit. Okay. And I'm doing two at a time here. We can do this with three at a time and, some arbitrary number, obviously. So, and we'll call the size that we choose a window size. That's the window of packets, that window of data that we're currently sending. And it's called a sliding window because if we think of our data, our window is going to be here, and then we're going to move it over to here, slide it across our data as we're sending it. And that window represents the data we're currently having go over the network and might need to resend. Questions? Okay, and let's talk about what happens, in cases where we have losses with this that are going to be a little more complicated than our stop and wait idea. And the simplest case is that let's say we lose one of the acknowledgments and we get one later. This is the reason I've chosen to do acknowledge up to everything, because this means that now I can look at this acknowledgment of up to two and say, okay, this means that we know that the receiver got 0 and 1. We don't need two acknowledgments to say that. This one that says we got up to two, or sorry, up to, no, it got, sorry, 1 and 2. We don't need, even though the acknowledgment says acknowledge up to two, we didn't see an acknowledgment for one, but that's fine, because this acknowledgment of up to two says everything up to and including two, we got. And so that's the reason we're going to choose to have, this acknowledge up to scheme, is that it's going to usually make it so losing acknowledgments isn't a big deal. It also, as a kind of more advanced notion, allows our receiver to send fewer acknowledgments if it gets a lot of things at once. I'm not going to show many examples that do that, but that is a thing that really happens in sort of TCP, for example, is that you get 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, you'll just acknowledge 4 rather than sending 3 extra packets. Yeah?
So if there's an up to scheme for the acknowledgement, wouldn't it just be optimal to send the whole thing at the same time? And then just off of one acknowledgement, you can tell how far you made it and then just resend the missing
So the question, if there's an up to scheme, why wouldn't we just send, you know, the acknowledgement for 2 and not send these earlier acknowledgements?
Yeah.
So that is not an unreasonable idea. There's a compromise there. So one advantage of that is that, like, it puts lower load on the network. A disadvantage of that is that we really want to have our sender, you know, sign of send the next thing as soon as possible. And so that's an incentive for us to send the acknowledgement as soon as possible. And we can't acknowledge things we haven't received. And so kind of the natural scheme is to send it as soon as possible. But yes, there are actually advantages to deliberately delaying it a little bit. And so some systems do, in fact, do that. Yeah?
So what would a machine B send back when it just totally didn't get message 1? Would it still say we acknowledge up to 2 and with a note that, but I didn't receive 1?
So your question is, what would we do if we don't get message 1? That is our next question. We'll get to that. And I'll take suggestions. What should we do? So I guess there's a couple questions. So if we don't get anything after it, well, we don't even know there's a message 1. But let's say I get a message 2. What? Give me some proposals for things our receiver could do in this with in message 2. Yeah?
Resend got upper ACK up to 0.
So we could resend the ACK. Okay. Yeah?
We could send no ACK and just wait for the message to get resent again.
Okay. Wait. Any other ideas? Yeah.
Are these particular slides posted on the website?
Are these posted on the website? Yes, they're just in a different order. I will fix that after this lecture, but I reordered them this morning. These slides are in that slide deck. They're just later. Yeah. Okay. So, and I also have this as an A. Buffer contents of 2. So one thing I think we definitely need to do that, you know, isn't something we need to send, but we should remember this message too, because probably we'd like it not to be resent, if possible. As for which of these two options to do, these are both options which will produce correct behavior. In the case of option number 2, we're just going to rely on the timeout. The timeout's going to happen, and it's going to cause message 1 to be resent when there's no response. And then hopefully we resend an ACK response to that. But it would be better to send something back to the receiver. And this is, in fact, usually what we'll do. We'll send what's called a duplicate ACK. And this is useful, especially when we have in a more complete situation with a larger window. This is very useful because here it seems like, you know, okay, so if I'm the receiver, I got these 2 acknowledgments for 0. What does that tell me? Well, knowing that the policy is that I send an acknowledgement for the stuff I actually got, that tells me probably something got lost. In fact, it's more specific than that. It tells me probably message 1 is lost. So this is going to be a hint that I need to start resending after 0 because it's getting stuff from me, but it didn't get message 1. And this is going to be an even stronger hint if we send like 3, 4, and we get a whole bunch of acknowledgments of up to 0 after each other. That's going to say, oh, okay, yep, lots of things got there, but not message 1. Yeah?
So what happens if we ask out of order, let's say 0 fails to send earlier, or 1 fails to send like twice, something like that, and then 0 kind of floats in the ether or something in the process, or ACK gets lost, it's slow, and then it gets an ACK 0 after it's already gotten like something funky there.
So you're asking about ACKs being reordered?
Yeah.
So you're asking, like, going back to our normal scenario here, what if instead of these ACKs being received in order, like, you know, one of these gets delayed, is what you're asking. In that case, our receiver knows if you told me you received up to 4 and received up to 2, it can tell that that ACK is out of order. Yes?
I was just wondering, are there multiple timeouts? Could you just do it with just one timeout for the window and not use one for each packet?
So could I just use one timeout? So you're asking here, I have separate timeouts for each thing.
Yeah.
So I think the question, could we just use one timeout? I think you can make that work, but that means you have to set the timer to kind of something that works for all of them. So probably what you end up doing is you end up only resending packet 1 down here if you only have one timer. So every system I know of, in fact, sort of manages the multiple timers because that's really bad to do. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
What are typical window sizes look like in general, out of curiosity?
What do typical window sizes look like in general? We'll get to that topic in a bit, in a more explicit way. Yeah?
What is the word written after buffer on the slide?
Buffer contents of 2. So that is definitely something we should do. Yeah, so we'll have this idea where we send these duplicate acks. And there's a heuristic that you don't have to do, but that you can do, is that if you see lots of duplicate acks, you can just say, let's not wait for a timeout. Let's just resend that right away. And in fact, TCP does this and calls it fast retransmit. Basically, the idea is, if I see ACK 0, ACK 1, ACK 1, ACK 1, ACK 1, probably I should resend 2. Probably 2 is missing. And TCP has this optimization where it doesn't wait for a timeout in this case. It just says, let's resend 2 right away. And the heuristic in TCP, the specific choice they made, is that they do it after 3 duplicate ACKs. So you might say, why do they wait for 3 duplicates? So they're waiting all the way to here. And the answer is that they want to deal with things being reordered a little bit without sending extra stuff, because sending extra stuff is going to overload the network. They don't want to do that. Okay. Question here. And there's going to be some other details about things that happen with fast retransmit we'll talk about later when we talk about the topic of congestion control. Yeah, so this is our kind of duplicate ACK situation. Questions on? Yeah?
Isn't this duplicate ACK system kind of just doing the same function as a timeout?
Isn't it doing the same function as a timeout? Yes. So this is an optimization. Right? And the reason we prefer it over timeouts is that we can be faster than a timeout for retransmitting. So it's going to turn out that we usually want to set our timeouts to be longer than, I guess, the round trip time. So you might say, well, the timeout should be the round trip time, but the problem is that we're going to have an estimate of the round trip time, and it's going to vary a bit. And we actually saw that. You know, if you look at my measurements here, I can do the IP example, right? This measurement here, right? These are my round trip time measurements, min, average, max, standard deviation. So if I'm setting a timeout for this, if I'm going to set a timeout for this, I'm going to probably want to set the timeout to something like 16 milliseconds or something maybe bigger than that, because I want to handle higher end of the round trip times without sending extra stuff on the network, which is going to sort of waste bandwidth. It's going to be stuff I'm sending that's not new data and could have been new data. Yeah?
Can real protocols like ICMP and TCP dynamically adjust the timeout in a communication, or do they just statically set a really large timeout?
Question, can they dynamically adjust the timeout? Yes, we will talk about that explicitly in a bit. Okay, or sometime later. But yes, you can dynamically adjust the timeout, and kind of the intuition for how do you set timeouts well, you measure it. How do you measure it? Well, you're sending stuff back and forth. You can measure the round trip time. And that is, in fact, what TCP does. It measures the round trip time. But you can't set it to the, you want to set it to kind of the maximum expected round trip time based on your measurements, not to like the average. So here we have a situation where I lose packet 1 and packet 3 here. So sequence number 1 and sequence number 3. And sequence number 1 and 3. Yeah, so 3. I just drew this picture poorly. Yeah, so this acknowledgement shouldn't be... Oh, I know what I did wrong. Okay. So I meant to draw this to go down here, not next to the packet that's not received. But if we are missing multiple packets, we want to have, you know, our selective, or sorry, duplicate acknowledgments are just going to tell us about the first missing one. Yeah?
Sorry, this is a little bit late, but what happens if we receive an ACK up to 0 after resending packet 1?
So the question is, what happens if we receive an ACK up to 0 after resending packet 1?
Could we incorrectly read that and resend packet 1 again?
So that's a detail that's going to have to, we're going to have to deal with in, yeah, our fast retransmit idea, is that we need to realize we expect to see more duplicate acts. And I believe typically the way TCP deals with it is that we only resend once we get that third act, duplicate app, and then we don't keep resending it until there's a timeout. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
And also, we kind of set the timeout based on our most recent sending of it. So we're not going to resend it until not the normal timeout, but the timeout for the new version we sent. Does that answer your question? So a fix we can do. Yeah, I just have this in the wrong, this thing needs to go down here, sorry. But basically, something we can do that's called selective acknowledgments is instead of just saying I got up to 0, I can say something like I got up to 0 and also I got 2. Or I got up to 0 and also I got 2 and also I got 4. And this information is obviously useful for that sort of fast retransmit idea, in that we can not only retransmit, you know, the thing that we have these duplicate acts for, but we can retransmit some other things that we know are kind of holes in the data that was received that probably we're guessing, you know, got lost too. And this idea is known as selective acknowledgments. And it is in fact something that kind of, it has been added on to TCP. So original TCP only had that one acknowledgment number. And that one of the things they realized is kind of useful to have some extra information. So they added this extension to TCP that's pretty much, not everything, but most systems implement these days, where when sending back an acknowledgement, the receiver can say, here are the ranges of data I got that are after the thing I acknowledged. So I got up to like 3, and I also got 4 through 7 and 9 through 12. And that can be kind of a hint to the receiver that, oh, this is some these are things you don't need to resend. And it also tells you the things that aren't in there are things you might want to resend. This is like not like full information, so you could imagine a version of this is like kind of send like the entire list. The way it's in TCP, it has room for 3 ranges. If it's more than the 3 ranges, you just don't get that information. Okay, so questions, selective acknowledgments. So this extension. Yeah.
And so you have some sort of way of encoding nothing extended there, and that thing there. So the theory is the sort of size trade-off thing, where you have the method of also saying you not using any of them.
Is there a method of saying I'm not using any of them, or I believe there's a way of having empty ranges? Yes, and the standard, this RFC 2018, like, has rules for if you have more ranges than you can put in, which ones do you include? Just which ones do you have to include? Other questions? Okay, so we kind of have kind of the intuitive mechanics of our sliding window protocol and some notions of like what happens when we have missing packets, what are we going to see, and some optimizations based on that. But let's talk about kind of state tracking for it. And in our textbook kind of thinks of what we do at the sender and receiver as kind of tracking two variables for each one. So at the sender, we're going to track this last ACK receive, which our textbook calls LAR, and this last frame sent. And we can think of this as specifying, you know, for last ACK received, everything up to there is verified received. And that means we don't need to keep any of that data around. It is sent already, the receiver has it, the receiver should never need another copy of it, because if they lost it, it's their fault now. Then we have some data that we've sent but hasn't been acknowledged. So this is stuff we still need to keep around that we might need to resend, and there's going to be a timeout for each one of these frames about when to resend it if we don't have any other action taken on it. And then there's stuff after that that we might have buffered, but we haven't sent yet, and we aren't allowed to send yet because it exceeds the number of packets we're allowed to have in flight at a time. So I'm using in flight to describe things that are seem to be on the network. They might not be, but as far as we know, they are. And we're going to restrict this number in flight to what our textbook calls the send window size. So I'm typically just going to talk about the window size, saying that the size of the window on the sender and receiver are the same. So I think that's the easiest scenario, but it doesn't have to work that way. And I guess for the assignment, probably the way I would implement things is I have an infinite receive window size and a fixed send window size. Yeah. Question, in real protocols, are the sender and receiver window sizes typically the same? No. So as we'll learn when we talk about a topic called congestion control, typically the sender window is going to be set based on the network conditions. And the receiver window is basically what can the application that's receiving the data accept now? Like how much data are we willing to buffer? That's going to control how the receiver window is set. And also the sender window will usually be constrained by the receiver window. In TCP, the way this works is that the receiver sends back, here's how much I'm willing to accept, and it uses that to help set its window to not be too big. Answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay. And so what we're going to do here is when we receive an ACK, we might update last ACK receive. If we receive an ACK for a higher number than we've gotten before, and we might send new frames in order to maintain this constraint that the send window size stays that same value. Okay, so questions about this kind of sender state? So let's go through example here. So let's say I'm the sender. This is my state. I've received my last ACK received is 10 for frame 10. My last frame sent is 15. My window size therefore is 5. So I have 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 are my packets that are in flight. My question is, what happens if we receive each of these? So let's start with, what happens if I receive an ACK with 9 in it? Can talk with your neighbor, see if you agree on what the answer should be. Okay, food lights some more time? And I realized option B kind of makes everything possible, so I'll add that to, or frame corruption to A. So who thinks it's only possible if the network reorders frames or there's some sort of frame corruption? Okay, who thinks it's only possible if there's frame corruption? Thinks it means we lost an ACK for an earlier frame? Thinks we lost an ACK for one of the frames in flight? Thinks it means we lost frame 11? The first one that's not acknowledged yet? Thinks that means that we sent a frame from a tenant. Okay, so most people say correctly, this means the network reorder frames. And why does it mean that? Well, because the way our acknowledgments work, it's acknowledge up to 9. The only way that could be sent is if it's sent, when the receiver didn't have frame 10 yet. And we know the receiver has frame 10 because we recorded that in our last ACK receive, so we know this must be reordering. Okay, so how about 10? Yeah.
Are we assuming that we have not received, we have not received more than one previous ACK for frame 10?
Are we assuming we've not received more than one ACK for frame 10? We don't have that in our state information.
That might change what does it.
So it might change your answer, yes. So give you a bit to think about 10. But indeed, like I'm not tracking some state, maybe I should be tracking. Okay, who would like some more time? Okay, so who thinks A, this is only possible if we have reordering going on? How about B, only possible if we have like actual corruption that we don't detect somehow? Who thinks C, that it means we lost an old ACK? Thinks D, that means we lost a new ACK? Couple people. Who thinks E, that means we lost frame 11? and who thinks F means that we sent a frame from a timeout and that was caused this. So I think our plurality is here, and we also have some on the lost X. So I think E alone is the best answer. As for us losing acknowledgments, I don't see good reason to, like, that could have happened. I don't see good reason to believe that that happened. I know we lost frame 11 because we've received an ACK for 10 before, and we're receiving another one. So we have a duplicate ACK, and in order for that to happen, we definitely don't have frame 11 sent, and the receiver receives something that is either a duplicate of 10 or something after 10. So I think probably we lost frame 11. Maybe sort of duplicate of 10 received. Maybe we have a duplicate of 10, so I think F is possible, but probably less likely. But I could imagine F triggering it if we resent 10 in the past and something happened there. I don't think we have any real information about what acknowledgments were lost from this here. So questions on my interpretation there? Okay, and how about 13? Like some more time? Okay, who thinks A? B? C? D? E? F? I think D is most likely, assuming that our receiver sent acks for everything it received and didn't like try to consolidate them. This would mean that it sent an ACK 10, 11, 12, and we just didn't get it. Alternately, maybe it just got a bunch of packets all together and decided to only send one ACK. Okay, so questions. I'll go over sort of 16 here. If we get an ACK for 16, something's wrong, because we did not send that. So that, I think, would be B. Okay. So another part of the sender logic is we have these timeouts, and I kind of didn't talk very explicitly about how those timeouts are managed. So let's do here, and this is... why? This question here. So let's say, you know, frame 13, there's going to be a timeout. We sent frame 13, and we haven't received an ACK for it, there's a timeout for it. Which of these events should trigger me to cancel that timeout? And multiple might be true.
Yeah. see file 214.
I don't think it's
okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, so who thinks A, B, C, D? Okay, good. We all figured this out. Yeah, we when we receive an acknowledgement for 13 or something after it that tells us 13 is no longer something we need to resend because the receiver definitely got it. Sending 16 doesn't tell us that because, well, that just means that we move the window over, that means we, you know, receive. That the receiver got 11, that's not actually helpful. Okay, so another question. So let's say I get data with, I compute the data I want to send, you know, get read it from disk or something, or you know, I'm making a web page with sequence number 7. And this is my state. When should I send it? And oh, there should be an E something else. Who'd like some more time? So who thinks A, B, C, D, E? Okay, so we have consensus. We looked at our window size. We figured out, wait a moment, I have room for this. The you know, that we aren't always in a state where the last frame sent is high enough in this case because, well, we didn't have the data before. So, in some other cases, we won't send it until we get an acknowledgement. And I'll skip over that. So that's our kind of sender window talking. We have these windows. We have this last frame set, last ACK received, and send window size. And we receive an ACK. We adjust our last ACK received if it's in our window, window of things that are in flight, and we clear any timers for things that well we would have resent any elsewhere, and whenever we have, you know, we could advance our window whenever our window size suggests the last frame sent could be higher. We see if we have data we can send, and if so, we send it advance last frame sent. Questions? Yes. 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 Okay, so let's talk about the receiver side briefly. So on the receiver, we're going to track the last frame received. And since we have a policy of always sending acknowledgments, this is going to also be the last frame we acknowledged. And everything in there is already received. We've already received it. We don't need to do anything about it. And then we have our window, which has one thing which we haven't received yet. And then we have the remainder of our window, which are things we'll accept because they're in our window. And we might have received some of them because we might be missing 16 but have gotten 17 and 19, for example. But regardless of whether we're missing them or not, we'll accept them. This is data that we're going to store just in case. And we're going to constrain this to be our receive window size. Everything outside our receive window size, if our sender sends data here, sends data number 20, 21, we're going to discard that for being too far ahead. We're just going to say not ready for that yet. And the reason we have a constrained receive window size in practice is I don't want to have like a gigabyte buffer. Which is a real thing, you know, which could happen on a fast network, is that you could end up having your OS need to have a gigabyte buffer to implement things. So to avoid that, we have this receive window and we say, you know, it's only going to be like 10 megabytes for this really fast connection. If I have things skipping ahead like that, I'm just not going to accept them. And ideally, we tell the sender about the receive window size so they know not to send those things. But if they don't, it doesn't really matter because we just won't acknowledge them and they'll have to resend them later. Okay, so questions? Receiver state? Yeah.
So last frame, or set of frames, always going to be like whatever window size over our last frame received. So we update our last frame received, we must update our last frame accepted.
So the customer, we update our last frame received, we must update our last frame accepted? Yes, or change our window size. Other questions? Yeah.
What's the occasion that you accepted the last three frames, but they're not received?
What's the occasion where I accepted? So what do you mean? How could I? What do I mean by so accepted but not received?
Yeah.
So by accepted, I mean if these are sent to us, we will actually process them. That's to contrast to here, where if I receive frame 21, I'm just going to ignore it. Because it's out of what I'm willing to store.
But if it's inside the receiver window, as long as they're accepted, it doesn't 100% mean it's received.
Question: as long as accepted doesn't mean received. When I say accepted here, I mean it will be accepted. It is something the receiver will accept if it is received.
Okay.
But whether it's received or not, we don't know from this state. That's going to have to be tracked separately.
Okay.
Does that answer your question? So to actually implement this, we'll have some sort of structure to represent, here's the data I've received but not given to the application, probably. Yeah?
So possibly received means that the LFR will possibly be incremented later to point at like packets or frame 17.
Question, possibly the LFR will possibly implement later? Well, in general, it possibly will. But what could have happened, so maybe frame 16 wasn't sent on the network. So maybe we have all these frames here, and we got frame 18 and 19. But 16 and 17 were lost due to something happening in the network. In that case, when I receive an acknowledgement of 16, I'm going to advance last frame received here. When I receive an acknowledgement of 17, I'm going to advance it to all the way to there, because 17 plus the 18 and 19 I got before gets me all the way to 19. And I just have this hole that I didn't receive yet. Yeah? This question, when I receive an acknowledgement, when I receive data for 16 and 17, yeah. When I receive data for 16, I'm going to advance last frame received to here. When I save it for 17, I'm going to advance it all the way to 19 because I already received 18 and 19. So that means I'm going to have to do the bookkeeping for which of these frames in the yellow region do I actually have, but just got out of order. Because the point of having a receive window size that's greater than one is that I can get stuff out of order, you know, and save, you know, retransmissions by doing that. Other questions? So our receiver logic is that we have our last frame received, our last accepted frame, and our receive window size. And whenever we receive, we receive data, we're going to update our last frame received to be the first missing frame minus one. So we're going to look at all the stuff we have and just take the first missing one minus one. So that gives us that case where sometimes we receive 17, but we advance to 19 because we have 18 and 19. We would look at what frames do I have? I have 16, 17, 18, 19. Oh, 19 is where we set. Not, it's just based on what we've actually got, not just the last thing we got. And our last accepted frame is going to be sort of our last frame received plus our window size. And I guess for our last, so questions on the receiver logic? For our last, don't have that. So I have some questions on things, but as a sort of preview of how do we set window sizes, which is going to, as I said, be like a major topic, that if we measure the window size and kind of, here I did this in the simulator that's part of the assignment with certain settings, we get kind of something that looks like this as far as our performance goes. So we can figure out where we want to set the window size. You might say, where does this dotted line come from? Well, that's kind of the capacity of the link. So we're going to get this kind of shape. And we probably want to set the window size around here and not here or here. And we're going to have a lot of time we're going to spend in a few weeks about how do we actually do that. But we're actually going to talk about other topics first.